This is The Poet and the Poem from the Library of Congress. I am Grace Cavalieri, and we are so happy that Emily Fragos is here. She came down from Manhattan. She was a Witterbinder Fellow. We remember her from before, and she's here with an opening poem. The book is Saint Torch.
The Sadness of Clothes. When someone dies, the clothes are so sad. They have outlived their usefulness and cannot get warm and full. You talk to the clothes and explain that he is not coming back, as when he showed up immaculately dressed in slacks and plaid jacket and had that beautiful smile on, and you'd talk. You'd go to get something and come back, and he'd be gone. You explain death to the clothes like that dream. You tell them how much you miss the spouse and how much you miss the pet with its little winter sweater. Mm. You tell the worn raincoat that if you talk about it, you will finally let grief out. The ancients forged the words for battle and victory onto their shields, and then they went out and fought to the last breath. Words have that kind of power, you remind the clothes, that remain in the drawer, arms stubbornly folded across the chest, or slung across the backs of chairs, or hanging inside the dark closet. Do with us what you will, they faintly sigh, as you close the door on them. He is gone, and no one can tell us where.
That's Emily Fragos, and nobody would be able to end a poem just like that. What is this book about? How do you describe it? I know how I describe it. I just want to see if you know.
Well, the title, many people have asked me about the title, Saint Torch. There is no such person. There was no such saint. I made her up. But there were many young women who were burned at the stake. Sounds so horrible. And so I imagined her. And that particular poem, which I'll read a little bit later, is about a blessing for people from this young woman's mouth. And I think in a lot of these poems, there are perhaps blessings for people, or a sense of compassion, or a sense of empathy, or no matter how dark, no matter how despairing, no matter how abandoned or lonely or one may feel, that there is a sense of perhaps communion.
That is so well said.
Yeah.
Because I felt many things, but the word blessing is so right. That is so right.
I think so. And a lot of the poems, particularly, that's why I chose her poem for the title, because it does have the final blessing that she offers. Also, that poem came about very strangely, if I may take a moment. I was reading about...
Well, perhaps we should read the poem.
Oh, yes, let's do that. And here it is, yeah. At the burning of Saint Torch. In my father's fields, tired hands spread manure, owlets scream in their nests, scaring the children with the sounds of their wild lives, and the great, patient oxen pull, pull. A path is being cut through the throng for my cart, and the dancing bear with a ring through its soft nose. His beautiful fur is wet and glistening. I enter the delirium like a child enters the playroom, deaf to the surface of things. With your last body, pray for the beasts to be yoked together with them, to stumble with them, to be halted, to be rested.
So much compassion. And how did that come about?
Two ways. I was reading a little bit about, believe it or not, the Buddha, and he was talking about your last body. And I said, I'll be darned. I didn't know we had different bodies, but we do as we go through life. There's a first body and there's a last body. And I said, no, that would be interesting. And I was toying with a poem about this imagined Saint Torch. And I said, she's a young woman, but what would the prayer be of this saint with her last body. And so that's how the poem came about.
Other than that, the fairy tale, folkloric, rustic, magic, it's as if every poem has elves and toadstools under it. You are from another realm. I thought these might come from dreams. No, these are much better than dreams, really. But your imagination, we should do something about your imagination. It's out of control. The way you describe the characters, they are not quite from a circus. They're not quite from another planet. They're so human, but they're so epitomized. What do you make of yourself? How do you speak for yourself?
A lot of people say this. Where are you writing from?
But it is just so wonderful. It's like entering another world, a rustic world.
I've been told this by many people.
Don't you know that you do this?
It's hard to explain. A lot of them are persona poems, and so I kind of inhabit the body or the voice of someone else, someone strange to me.
It's like Italo Calvino mixed with Madonna or something.
Yeah, there you go.
That's perfect. Let's have another poem, and we'll see if this is true.
This is an interesting poem that I recorded for A Poem a Day. And as you know, they have a lot of discussion after A Poem a Day on the internet. And there was this long discussion about this poem. Who is the you in this poem? And everyone, of course, was chipping in. The you is God. The you is this. The you is that. And it stunned me a little bit.
I didn't know they had that after A Poem a Day.
They had a long commentary, and I was puzzled by it. It's not a secret. The you is not God. It's my sister. My late sister, I should say. My late sister. And so this poem was written in her memory. It's called The Dark Tree, The Cold Sea. Although I know you can never be found, although I know that from the highest height you cannot be seen, you are not hiding from me, or are you? Is it how you look now, or maybe how I look now, all these years gone by, places seen, people met, not knowing at any time who I was, or how others saw me, or did not see me? And how are you, wherever you are? If I write you a letter, I'll get no answer. If I cry out for you to come in my final hour, you will not come, but I will still look for you.
Mm. Yeah, that one blows me away. Let's have another.
Thank you, Grace.
Because they're getting to know you.
This is an interesting little poem. I'm not even sure how to pronounce the title. Iksurapok. It's an Inuit word. And a student of mine said to me, here's a list of words that cannot be translated. And I said, what does that mean? And he said, they can't be translated. There's no such way to talk about them. And one of them was this word, and it means a lot of things, but I tried to interpret it because, as he said, you can't interpret it. So here's my interpretation of this one untranslatable word, Iksurapok, which is Inuit. To rise from the bed, to go into the cold, to wait for the one who does not come, to hear the snow squeal beneath your feet, to see your breath fume, to feel your heart beat, to look left, then right, for the one who is coming, who does not come. You sit at the table to stare at the door, for the one who is coming, who does not come. To go far, far into the dark rock, to go deep, deep into the cold sea, to look for the one who does not come.
The voice of Emily Fragos. She teaches at Columbia and NYU and lives in New York. And she was the recipient of the Witterbinner Poetry Prize from the Library of Congress. She's had a Guggenheim in poetry and the Literature Award from the American Academy of Arts and Letters. She's had other acclaimed books of poetry. One is Hostage. One is Little Savage. And she's the editor of six poetry anthologies for the Every Man's Pocket Library. That's a small book you can carry in your pocket, and it has how many poems? 100 poems in it, maybe?
Maybe about 150, yeah.
And this new one that just came out is Book of Gratitude, Poems of Gratitude. So you can Google it and see what... I just bought a dozen. I'm telling you, I'm giving one to everyone I know.
Thank you, Grace.
Emily Fragos. Now, very briefly, tell us why you're in D.C.
Well, I came last night for a very special occasion. I went to the Kennedy Center to see performances by the great Suzanne Farrell Ballet. And these are, in fact, the final performances of the Suzanne Farrell Ballet, much to my anguish, because I'm a huge fan, and I have been a huge fan of the legendary Miss Farrell for many years. And the performances were so beautiful, all the Balanchine choreographies and the wonderful dancing. And I was, as I was saying to you, Grace, dance to me is so mysterious. I understand poetry. I understand instrumentalists and painters. I am in awe of the dance, the mystery of the dance, the expressiveness in the movement without any words.
Is it the highest art form in your mind?
Maybe it's because it's the most ancient. I don't know, but could be that maybe the muses from years and years ago are speaking to me. But it has something very moving about it. What did Wallace Stevens say? Life is motion, right? Life is motion. And maybe this is the...
What did they want you to do?
Well, they asked me to write the introduction for the beautiful book that they... It's a photo book in celebration of Suzanne Farrell and the Suzanne Farrell Ballet. And I was honored to write the introduction to the book and to speak to Ms. Farrell and her beautiful, profound comments about movement and music and moving the human body to music and how to dance to George Balanchine, how to bring out the nuance.
You often write on dance and music, what's your background?
Well, I have played the cello, not well, and I've played the piano, classical piano, not well there either. Strictly amateur on every possible level, but
you know,
yeah, I've always
the deal.
I just
you know
I've
music.
Always loved it. Yeah,
and it's in your poetry also. You have
I think
Chopin,
so too.
You have many poems.
Scarlatti is in there. Yeah. Bach is in there. I'm a big Bach
Let's
fan.
Let's go there then.
Okay.
Emily Fragos has come to us, and we are so glad. This new book is out by Sheep Meadow Press.
Mm-hmm. Let me read Bach Fugue. Freeze the horses from their mechanical bolts, keeps the fire from spreading to the sleeper's floor. The miming dancers in the wings swell to great, begin their sly whisperings, their tired arms around each other's waist. The old woman spoons yellow cake into her celestial tremulous mouth, is capable of putting poor Gloucester's eyes glistening back, catches the jumpers with invisible nets from their sad night bridges, finds all those who have been lost to you. The great chords once struck can never decay.
These are characters from Bruegel. I can see them. They're so pictorial.
Thank you.
And another.
And I love Bruegel, too, so I'm glad that you picked Bruegel. Here's a poem that I'm going to dedicate. I just happened to open to this poem, but it's a good poem to read. It's dedicated to, one of my favorite people on this earth, William S. Merwin, our great American poet, who just celebrated his 90th birthday. And one of the kindest human beings, the most evolved human being imaginable, just a lovely, lovely man. And he has taught me so much through his poems and by the example of his life, by how kind and courteous he is. And we both love animals. And so this is actually about dogs. And then it morphs into people. Hostage, dedicated to William S. Merwin. God is in the dogs, the one who turns in circles, the one with scabs, the one who wears the collar, who stares and stares and tries in spite of it to smell the dirt and grass. In the abandonment, torrential muteness, my knees loosened, my glassy eyes of crystal warmed, and it was given, even should we sleep, turn, weep, recite, screaming, the city is conquered, and the little king will have to go, insane and unreachable, we are still here.
If I were to teach how to get emotion in a poem, I would teach your work. Because,
thank you, Grace.
First of all, the narrator is not present. The ego is not there. You're not in the middle of the poem.
Oh, thank you, Grace. I do not want the ego there.
Mostly, the word choice. If I could just sit down students and say, the way you get feeling is from the diction. What is the diction? It's the words you choose. How do they make you feel? This is the book to teach. Everyone out there,
thank
it's
you,
called
Grace.
Saint Torch, and if you want to teach how emotion is embedded in a poem without saying, I am lonely, I am sad, read it.
Thank you so much.
Do it, Grace. To us again. Emily Fragos.
Thank you. I think I'll read this because it was paired with the poem that I read previously, the Inuit word, Iksorapok. It's called Snow Diary, 1846. It's not a poem that too many people talk about, and I don't think I've ever read it before, so this might be a good opportunity. I like it, but nobody ever comments about it, so I guess. But I do like it. Snow Diary, 1846. Father saw thin tracks and followed them, but found only wild, fleet deer leaping majestically out of the mounds. Brother heaves the axe more than anything else with such beauty. Huge birds with wings 10 feet across soared above our heads and melted into the milk-white sky. Would I were a bird with wings to get about. The mules fall head first into the drifts and are too tired to get up. Our fathers yoke themselves to each other and lash themselves to the heaped pallets, which they pull like bullocks. All our eyes are turning blue.
Mm-hmm.
We are close. We are close, I say to my friends, who, dark and dumb, can no longer. I tumble into California and place my feet slowly, methodically in the right way, so that I might seem a bright young thing again. I am to marry a good man and live in the golden, sumptuous sun that sings a midstream, that sings a full tilt without my once done asking. Oh, my lost ones, days no one knows when the weakness comes over me.
I wondered why it said 1846.
I think I was thinking back to these great treks westward that were done in those ages and what the people had to go through to populate the country and what happened to many of them. They perished or they underwent such horrors and hardships.
I thought it was a persona that perhaps we should know about, because sometimes you write about people that are extraordinary.
Yeah, I sometimes use the persona and then it becomes not one but many people, or the experience itself, the emotion itself.
As in this.
Yeah, as in this. It may be a girl speaking about her family, but in the end it becomes not even about people going westward in 1840, but it becomes about difficulties, hardships.
It becomes about the most beautiful words that you can imagine put together.
Thank you, Grace.
You have a poem in there about a mad woman, and it's very touching
goodness.
To me. Emma Hauk, is it?
Emma Hauk. She was real.
Yes, and that's what I wanted to point out, was that sometimes you do focus on actual people, and she was a character that perhaps you tell us about.
Emma
Before
Hauk,
you read it.
Yes, I love art, and I love some outsider art. An outsider artist is someone who is not formally trained or someone who was just created great art.
I like that so much better than primitive artists.
Yeah, on his or her own. Mm-hmm. Sometimes they were ill. Sometimes they were even institutionalized. Sometimes they were very handicapped. And they simply on their own created great art without any formal training, any support, anything. Just out of a drive to create something beautiful from their circumstances. And Emma Hauk, I came upon her because I was very interested in the topic of outsider art. And she lived in 1909 Germany and was in a hospital for schizophrenics. And she wrote letters to her husband, I don't know how many, thousands, maybe tens of thousands.
Did you come across any?
Yeah, they're beautiful. And they've been in museums here in New York. You can actually see them. They're stunning. They don't even look like letters. They look like flowing waves in an ocean, you know, writing. And she wrote two words over and over and over again. Sweetheart, come. That's all she wrote. Sweetheart, come. In German, I'm sorry, I can't do it in German, but that's what she wrote. And she wrote those two words tens of thousands of times, and often all on top of each other. And so that when you see the letters in a museum, they look like waves in the water or things. They're really filled with just physical emotion, in two words. And so I wrote that. I was just stunned by seeing the work and reading this. I'd never heard anything like this before. And I wrote this poem called The Letters of Emma Hauk. And I believe this was somehow a lulling or a consoling, although the letters were never answered. I don't even think they were mailed.
If there even was a husband.
Yeah, that's right.
They were works of art, calligraphy.
Mm-hmm. That's exactly right. That's exactly the word, beautiful calligraphy. The letters of Emma Hauk. Come the labyrinth, come the curdling word, the black ladder that tears a hole through the asylum's roof, troposphere, stratosphere, to make for us our own anesthesia, lullaby and good night, sweet love. Pleased to wear rags around the mouth and nose to contain the last essence from seeping, weighted down by gauze, just barely, to keep us here by what kind of what?
Tell us about that last line. That is a killer last line. You know what? There's just no better last line than that. And it is so unpredictable and so perfect. How did that come to you?
I'm not sure how it came to mind, but as I'm reading it, I think that if you are in a difficult situation by illness or grief or whatever it may be, you wonder why and what is keeping me here? What is keeping this going? Is there a way out of it? And what kind of what did this to me?
What kind of
what made this happen?
Yes.
I don't know. You know, no, an unanswerable
a
question.
Perfect yeah, last
unanswerable
line, no,
question.
A perfect last line. I want to know, before we hear a final poem, what did you read as a child? Because there's so much magic in you.
I was a voracious reader.
No kidding.
I absolutely voracious. It was my release, I think, my security, my love.
Just name some things that are stuck in your DNA.
I remember being in elementary school and reading Charles Dickens. I think David Copperfield, I was born with the first three serious words of literature I ever read. I was born.
In elementary school.
Mm-hmm. And my teacher said, I was stunned by that. She said, you shouldn't be reading this novel. So yeah, you're a little baby, you know, or something. And I loved it. And so I went through all of Dickens very early because I love Charles Dickens. And he is wonderful for characters, you must admit, one of the great masters of characters.
I think I know where you got it.
Mm-hmm. So I read a lot of Oliver Twist. But I remember I was born, David Copperfield, three
the first
words.
Letters you remember.
I remember that. And I read a lot of biography for some reason. I'm not interested in biography anymore, but as a child, I thought that was wonderful. And poetry I found very hard to understand when I was little. I read it, I read some of the serious poets, but I didn't understand what they, it was too young.
You were supposed to be reading a child's garden of verses, not T.S. Eliot. Didn't anyone ever tell you that?
Well, I read, I liked Dickens, I remember that. I had fairy tale books. I remember reading some books about fairy tales.
Well, there's a lot of Grimm in here.
Yeah, a lot of Grimm. Yeah,
but you did it better.
I did enjoy the fairy tales and found them beautiful. That's what I read.
Well,
that's,
give us one final fairy tale from Emily Fragos.
How about a music poem? Because it's, let's end on a happier, because some of my poems are sad, but this is a happier one. 19 Chopin Waltzes. And since I was at the Kennedy Center last night, let's end with music. Snow falls from rafters of pink, swollen clouds. Moonlight drenches the peasant's fields. The feathered flesh of a fish, the juice of a peach, the silver rivers before we name them with color, all the begetting, the weak limbs and soft bellies, the faces elongated like the devil himself, the devil himself, the ship that sails to dreams of Achilles, the palace of the deaf, the murmuring in centuries' rooms, the crying of turtle doves, the fleet-footed dancing. On earth, as in heaven, beauty without reason.
That's Chopin.
Yes,
and that's Emily Fragos.
Thank you, Grace.
The voice of Emily Fragos. This is The Poet and the Poem from the Library of Congress. The series is produced by Forest Woods Media Productions. Post-productions by Mike Turpin, MET Studios. We wish to thank the Library of Congress for making this program possible. Funding is provided by the Witter Binner Foundation for Poetry and the Reva and David Logan Foundation and Friends of Poetry, Hiram LaRue and Candace Katz. Our engineer is Mike Turpin. I'm Grace Cavalieri.